idea of the meaningless term instinct is that it's merely petrified thought, solidified and made inanimate by habit. Thought which was once alive and awake but has become unconscious, walks in its sleep, so to speak. Mark Twain, in What Is Man, described what they called instinct back in the 19th century. They called it instinct, but today we call it genetics. Sam, play that first clip for us right quick. We'll get that out here. The genetics. Oh, here we go.
So it all came to life in a dark bar in Madrid. And as I was stepping into the bar, I encountered my colleague from McGill, Michael Meaney. And we were drinking a few beers, and like scientists do, he told me about his work. And he told me that he is interested in how mother rats lick their pups after they were born. And I was sitting there and saying, this is where my tax dollars are wasted, on this kind of soft science. But as the beer got more intense and the alcohol gets into the brain, you become more receptive. And he started telling me that when the rats, like humans, lick their pups in very different ways. Some mothers do a lot of that. Some mothers do very little. And most are in between. But what's interesting about it is that when he follows these pups when they become adults, like years in human life, long after their mother died, they are completely different animals. The animals that were licked and groomed heavily, the high licking and grooming, are not stressed. They have different sexual behavior. They have different way of living than those that were not treated as intensively by her mother. So then I was thinking to myself, is this magic? How does this work? I'm a biochemist. I believe that there are chemical explanations to nature. I was working in a field called epigenetics, but before I jumped into that conclusion, we had to do another experiment. Is this genetic, as geneticists would like you to think? Perhaps the mother had the bad mother gene that caused her pups to be stressful, and then it was passed from generation to generation. It's all determined by genetics. Or is it possible that something else is going on here? So in rats, we can ask this question and answer it. So what we did is a cross-fostering experiment. You essentially separate the litter, the babies of this rat at birth, to two kinds of fostering mothers. Not the real mothers, but mothers that will take care of them. High-licking mothers and low-licking mothers. And you can do the opposite with the low-licking pups. And the remarkable answer was, it wasn't important what the gene you got from your mother. It was not the biological mother that defined this property of these rats. It is the mother that took care of the pups. So how can this work? And as I told you, I'm an epigeneticist. I'm interested in how genes are marked by a chemical mark during embryogenesis, during the time we're in the womb of our mothers, and decide which gene will be expressed in what tissue. Different genes are expressed in the brain, then in the liver, in the eye. And we thought, is it possible that the mother is somehow reprogramming the gene of her offspring through her behavior? And we spent 10 years, and we found that there is a cascade of biochemical events by which the licking and grooming of the mother, the care of the mother, is translated to biochemical signals that go into the nucleus and into the DNA and program it differently. So now the animal can prepare itself for life. Is life going to be harsh? Is it going to be a lot of food? Are there going to be a lot of cats and snakes around? Or will I live in an upper class neighborhood where all I have to do is behave well and proper, and that will gain me social acceptance? And now one can think about how important that process can be for our lives. We inherit our DNA from our ancestors. The DNA is old. It evolved during evolution. But it doesn't tell us if you are going to be born in Stockholm, where the days are long in the summer and short in the winter, or in Ecuador, where equal number of hours for day and night all year round. And that has such an enormous amount on our physiology. So what we suggest is perhaps what happens early in life, those signals that come through the mother tell the child what kind of social world you're going to be living in. It's going to be harsh, and you better be anxious and be stressful, or it's going to be an easy world, and you have to be different. Is it going to be a world with a lot of light or little light? Is it going to be a world with a lot of food or little food? If there's no food around, you better develop your brain to binge whenever you see a meal, or store every piece of food that you have as fat. So this is good. Evolution has selected this to allow our fixed old DNA to function in a dynamic way in new environments. But sometimes things can go wrong. For example, if you're born to a poor family, and the signals are, you better binge. You better eat every piece of food you're going to encounter. But now we humans in our brain have evolved, have changed evolution even faster. Now you can buy a McDonald's for $1. And therefore, the preparation that we had by our mothers is turning to be maladaptive. The same preparation that was supposed to protect us from hunger and famine is going to cause obesity, cardiovascular problems, and metabolic disease. So this concept that genes could be marked by our experience, and especially the early life experience, can provide us a unifying explanation of both health and disease. But is it true only for rats? The problem is we cannot test this in humans, because ethically we cannot administer child adversity in a random way. So if a poor child develops a certain property, we don't know whether this is caused by poverty or whether poor people have bad genes. So geneticists will try to tell you that poor people are poor because their genes made them poor. Epigeneticists will tell you poor people are in a bad environment or an impoverished environment that creates that phenotype, that property. So we moved to look into our cousins, the monkeys. My colleague Stephen Sumi has been rearing monkeys in two different ways. Randomly separated the monkey from the mother and reared her with a nurse in a surrogate motherhood conditions. So these monkeys didn't have a mother, they had a nurse. And other monkeys were reared with their normal, natural mothers. And when they were old, they were completely different animals. The monkeys that had a mother would not care about alcohol. They were not sexually aggressive. The monkeys that didn't have a mother were aggressive, were stressed, and were alcoholics. So we looked at their DNA early after birth and see, is it possible that the mother is marking? There is a signature of the mother in the DNA of the offspring. These are A14 monkeys. And what you see here is the modern way by which we study epigenetics. We can now map those chemical marks, which we call methylation marks, on DNA at a single nucleotide resolution. We can map the entire genome. We can now compare the monkey that had a mother and not. And here's a visual presentation of this. What you see is the genes that got more methylated are red. The genes that got less methylated are green. You can see many genes are changing, because not having a mother is not just one thing. It affects the whole way. It sends the signals about the whole way your world is going to look like when you become an adult. And you can see the two groups of monkey extremely well separated from each other. How old? How early does this develop? These monkeys already didn't see their mother, so they had a social experience. Do we sense our social status even at the moment of birth? So in this experiment, we took placentas of monkeys that had different social status. What's interesting about social rank is that across all living beings, they will structure themselves by hierarchy. Monkey number one is the boss. Monkey number four is the peon. And you put four monkeys in a cage, there will always be a boss and always be a peon. And what's interesting is that the monkey number one is much healthier than monkey number four. And if you put them in a cage, monkey number one will not eat as much. Monkey number four will eat as much. And what you see here in this methylation mapping, the animals that had a high social status versus the animals that did not have a high status. So we are born already knowing the social information. And that social information is not bad or good. It just prepares us for life because we have to program our biology differently if we're in a high or the low social status. But how can you study this in humans? So we can't do experiments. We can't administer adversity to humans. But God does experiments with humans. And it's called natural disasters. So one of the natural disasters, the hardest natural disaster in Canadian history happened in my province of Quebec. It's the ice storm of 1998. We lost our entire electrical grid because of an ice storm when the temperatures were in the dead of winter of Quebec, minus 20 to minus 30. And there were pregnant mothers during that time. And my colleague Suzanne King followed the children of these mothers for 15 years. And what happened was that as the stress increased, and here we had objective measures of stress, how long you were without power, where did you spend your time, was it in your mother-in-law apartment or in some posh country home. So all these added up to a social stress scale. And you can ask the question, how did the children look like? And it appears that as stress increases, the children develop more autism, they develop more metabolic diseases, and they develop more autoimmune diseases. And we would map the methylation state, and again you see the green genes becoming red as stress increases, the red genes becoming green as stress increases, an entire rearrangement of the genome in response to stress. So if we can program genes, if we are not just the slaves of the history of our genes, but they could be programmed, can we deprogram them? Because epigenetic causes can cause diseases like cancer, metabolic disease, and mental health diseases. Let's talk about cocaine addiction. Cocaine addiction is a terrible situation that can lead to death and to loss of human life. We ask the question, can we reprogram the addicted brain to make that animal non-addicted anymore? We used a cocaine addiction model that recapitulates what happens in humans. In humans, you're in high school, some friend suggests you some cocaine, you take cocaine, nothing happens, months pass by, something reminds you of what happened the first time, a pusher pushes cocaine, and you become addicted, and your life has changed. In rats, we do the same thing my colleague Alia did. He trains the animals to get used to cocaine. Then for 1 month, no cocaine. And then he reminds them of the party when they saw the cocaine the first time, by cue, the colors of the cage when they saw cocaine, and they go crazy. They will press the lever to get cocaine till they die. We first determined that the difference between these animals is that during that time when nothing happens, there's no cocaine around, their epigenome is rearranged, their genes are remarked in a different way, and when the cue comes, their genome is ready to develop this addictive phenotype. So we treated these animals with drugs that either increase DNA methylation, which was the epigenetic mark we look at, or decrease epigenetic markings. And we found that if we increase methylation, these animals go even crazier. They become more craving for cocaine. But if we reduce the DNA methylation, the animals is not addicted anymore. We have reprogrammed them. And the fundamental difference between an epigenetic drug and any other drug is that with epigenetic drugs, we essentially remove the signs of experience. And once they're gone, they will not come back unless you have the same experience. So the animal now is reprogrammed. So when we visited the animals 30 days, 60 days longer, which is in human terms, many years of life, they were still not addicted by a single epigenetic treatment. So what we learned about DNA, the DNA is not just a sequence of letters. It's not just a script. DNA is a dynamic movie. Our experiences are being written into this movie, which is interactive. You're like watching a movie of your life with the DNA, with your remote control. You can remove an actor and add an actor. And so you have, in spite of the deterministic nature of genetics, you have control of the way your genes look like. And this has a tremendous optimistic message for ability to now encounter some of the deadly diseases like cancer, mental health, with new approach, looking at them as maladaptation, that if we can epigenetically intervene, reverse the movie by removing an actor and setting up a new narrative. So what I told you today is that our DNA is really combined of two components, two layers of information. One layer of information is old, evolved for millions of years of evolution. It is fixed and very hard to change. The other layer of information is the epigenetic layer, which is open and dynamic and sets up a narrative that is interactive. So even though we are determined by our genes, we have a degree of freedom that can set up our life to a life of responsibility. Thank you.
Yeah, open and dynamic. Our DNA is open and dynamic. So when someone talks about genetics, they're not really being totally honest with us. Sam, play that first clip that didn't get played there.
Who eats McDonald's and fried chicken and all those Diet Cokes and who never exercises is in as good a shape as you say he's in.
It's called genetics.
It's because of genetics?
We discussed diet, exercise, and weight loss. He would benefit from a diet that is lower in fat and carbohydrates and from a routine exercise regimen. I told the president that if he had a healthier diet over the last 20 years, he might live to be 200 years old. I don't know. I mean, he has incredible genes, I just assume. Based on my exam, the cognitive testing that we did and just my day-to-day interactions with the president, the president is mentally very, very, very sharp, very intact.
Thank you. You said you're not sure how much sleep he gets a night, but you assume it's between 4 to 5 hours. Does that concern you? Would you recommend him to try to get more sleep?
I mean, sure. I think more sleep for all of us would be helpful. But it doesn't really concern me because I think it's just his nature. I think he's always been that way. And I just think that it works for him. It wouldn't work for me, but it works for him. I think he will remain fit for duty for the remainder of this term and even for the remainder of another term if he's elected.
Open and dynamic. Our DNA is not just something we have. We work on it. We'll be back in a few minutes. This is Captain Fred.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. with all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
If you should rear a duck in the heart of the Sahara, no doubt it would swim if you brought it into the Nile. Mark Twain said that in Gilded Age, and he was talking about genetics, I guess, or instinct. Today we're talking about the open and dynamic structure of our DNA. And if you had listened to the first part of the show, that was a talk by Moshe Sizif. Can't speak very well like that, but he's a professor from Hebrew University, and we're not going to get into the discussions of all these different universities. He's studied has a postdoctoral fellowship in genetics at Harvard Medical School, and he has a professorship in pharmacological science. But he brought up a couple of interesting things that I think are worth discussing. And what he brought up was the dynamic nature of our DNA. And he believes that the methylation is a therapeutic target. Methylation is the tagging of the DNA elements. And he believes that our environment actually tags our DNA to perform in different ways, and he called it social environment or social epigenetics. But do we have control of our DNA? Can we alter our DNA by what we think, by how we feel? Stress As stress increases, as he pointed out, so do the occurrences of the genetic illnesses. And I think the more that we study these processes, we'll understand how we can influence our own DNA by our own activities. Like Mark Twain said, it's just merely petrified thought, solidified and made inanimate by habit. And there was so much to what he said that we've got to take this into consideration when we think about how we're being manipulated by our social structure. If you watch television, then we're subjected to trauma events constantly, which basically changes our DNA. It changes how we feel, what we think. It changes who we are. It's creating illness. It's creating a condition that we didn't really understand not long ago. We knew that we were being conditioned, but now we have a few terms that we can describe these events, then let's start discussing this in a more structured way. This is Captain Fred. This is the Republic Broadcasting Network. Today is Saturday, January the 20th of 2018. Sometimes I'm a little slow stamping these shows that we do. So I'd like to open phone lines. This is the number here is 1-800-313-9443. I'd welcome your ideas and thoughts of how and what's happening with our DNA, what's happening with our culture, what's going on with this social epigenetics. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited. So take a breath, head to aroutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at aroutfitting.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com. Educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Lamarckism or Lamarckian inheritance is the idea that an organism can pass on characteristics that it has acquired during its lifetime to its offspring. Also, it's named after the French biologist Jean-Baptiste Lamarck, who lived 1744 to 1829. He incorporated the action of what he called then soft inheritance into his evolutionary theories. Now, of course, his evolutionary theories or his thoughts were shadowed by Darwinism of the time or later than he actually. But he believed that he didn't originate the idea of this soft inheritance, but he proposed that individual efforts during the lifetime of an organism were the main mechanism driving species to adaptation. So that would probably account for social epigenetics, as we call it today. With that, I'd like to bring on William in Montana. William, this is a pretty deep topic, and I don't think we're going to be able to make a lot of ground with it today. We may have to make two or three shows with this. What's your thought on this?
Well, good afternoon, Fred. It's always,
how you doing?
Good to hear you bring up all these thought-provoking concepts. I mean, it really is. I think this is one of the big issues. I take it a slightly different approach because, you know, biochemists, geneticists, epigeneticists, they all, you know, have their strengths, but they all sort of share this sort of reductionist worldview. I mean, they all sort of assume that the body is kind of different grades of plumbing. You know, I mean, the biochemists go deep, the geneticists go deeper, and then the epigeneticists try to correct the mistakes that geneticists fall into when they say there's a blueprint and there's nothing you can do about it. So there's a lot of things that we can learn from these people, but I just feel that, you know, when you talk about, you know, a bad environment or a bad childhood or a bad child-mother relationship as kind of the end-all, you know, you have to sort of define your terms. You know, like, what does bad environment mean?
Stressful.
You know, are we just talking about external things, or are we talking about a more deep cellular environment? You know, we may not be able to change very much about what we do, what happens to us, where we live, but, you know, if you can get into feeling empowered, you can really do a lot to change your cellular environment. And that will, you know, and that falls in with the epigeneticist. I mean, they do outline some very interesting things about how you can influence gene expression by changing the environment. But as you know, I'm a firm believer that if you really want to change gene expression in its more positive manifestations, you can't do it any better than through dietary nutrient modification. You know, that will change you very quickly at the cellular level, and many of these principles are really hard to get a handle on, just like that one guy who said, you know, they have so much misinformation, like, oh, you know, a diet low in fats and high in, natural whole carbohydrates, that diet will actually kill you. I mean, you know, the diet that I follow that I've had so much positive results is diametrically opposed to that. You know, if you saw how much fat, healthy fats I eat, I mean, that pretty much dominates my diet, and I don't eat any carbs.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the misinformation of the corporations that make money from our diet.
Without a doubt, that's very perceptive.
But, you know,
I think that is one of the issues, you know, and it also, I always say, you know, like, okay, how do we deal with this? You know, like, yeah, you can argue about this or that, but what's the best way to deal with this? And I would say very simply, you know, one of the simplest things you can do, eliminate sugar, and I mean all types of sugar, and stop chasing after likes on social media.
Good point.
Instead, learn how to aggressively opt out. Become like a total wacko, digital Luddite living in the wilds of Montana. I mean, I hate to, you know, I don't want to mention any names there, but I mean, you got to be crazy to survive in this world, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you need to see what's happening, and then stick to your guns. Just stay away from this crap. I mean, you always talk about television. I don't have much experience with TV. I haven't had one for 28 years or something like that. But
McKenna thought television was a drug. I mean, if you consider what it does and how people respond to it, it's probably the most used drug in the world right now.
Well, you know, I've been looking at a lot of stuff, you know, social media. It's starting to be known by the people that should have knew it from the beginning. Social media is devastating the psychology and mental health of children. There's all studies coming out all over. You don't see it so much in the United States, but in Europe they're starting to talk about it. But their way of dealing with it is they say the school should do more
on coaching kids how to post to social media so they get more likes. I mean, complete madness.
Well,
you know,
would you,
there, there's companies that you can pay to put likes on your kids', you know, Facebook page.
Oh, please don't tell me that. Are you serious?
Yes. It's like, you know, Karen, I really like the stupid, the wonderful picture of your goldfish. It was one of the most interesting things I've ever seen. Your secret friend, Connie, you know, and your parents can pay, you know, to have all these likes on your kid's Facebook page, because otherwise the kid can't sleep. The kid vomits. The kid doesn't want to go to school because they put a stupid picture of their goldfish up thinking that it was going to be, you know, go viral, and it didn't. And so, I mean, you know, like if you look at all the kids of these, you know, tech giants, they don't even allow their kids to use social media. You know, they send their kids to traditional schools, and they try to keep them away from digital computer, you know, cell phone addiction.
If you believe that, then what you're saying is that we're participating in social epigenetics, like he said, and
without a doubt. And I don't think they have our best interest at heart.
That's pretty profound, there, William.
You know, I believe that. You know, one of the things that really, when you're talking about bad environments, I always go back to the cellular environment, because that's something you have complete control over. You may not think you do because you've been fed all this gunk about what constitutes a good diet, and you've been harried so that, you know, you just swing into McDonald's and, you know, get a Big Mac and you think that that's nutrition. But if you really want to maximize the positive gene expression, and the body wants to be healthy, you know, it has, you know, 3 billion years, experience at trying to find the best way of doing things. So you really have a lot of innate intelligence there if you give it the building blocks that it needs to make sure you get sleep, make sure you get good nutrients, make sure you get lots of hydration, and the body will take it from there. It has an amazing curative, curative powers. It just needs to be treated a little bit better than our culture.
Well, I think we can have a lot of healthy zombies walking around too. I'm in agreement with you, but if people are involved in this social experiment, this social epigenetics that's happening with this social media, then it doesn't matter what you're consuming, as long as your brain is consuming this this programmed, I guess you'd call it this programmed drug. Then
it's a drug that you have to replenish, you know, by the minute. I mean, if you see these kids, you know, I mean, I've seen kids in elementary schools that come out and fall down the steps because they're trying to get their cell phone out of their pack, you know, as quick as possible to check their, you know, their text messages and stuff like that.
It's systemic too, William. I mean, I've noticed that people spend more time on their cell phones, and I was at a restaurant the other day, and one of the waiters was continually working on his cell phone, and I said, "Is it that important?" And he said, "Well, this is my job. I'm posting information to my boss, and it's become systemic. I mean, we can't even walk away from it when we are at work."
Yeah, and I was into high tech in a big way 10 years, 15, 20 years ago. I mean, really, really, really in it up to my neck. And many of my friends really think, they send me emails every now and then, you know, saying that I really should seek professional help, because they're very concerned when they find out that I've never signed up for Facebook or Snapchat or Instagram or Twitter, and they think maybe something has happened to me. They're really concerned about my mental health, because it's like, how can you be involved in at the level you were and then go cold turkey? It definitely seems to them as a total, you know, dysfunction. And I tell them, you know, like, I live in communities where, you know, very few people, I mean, they have cell phones. I don't even own a cell phone. They say, you know, why don't you ever post? And I say, I'm not signed up. And they wonder, you know, if I've fallen on hard times. And I say, no, I don't want to. They say, how do you stay informed? How do you know what's coming down the pike? And I say, well, you know, I have time to think. I have time to read. I have time to talk to very wise people in my community. You know, I know how to find out who the wise people are. I mean, those are survival skills that this new crop of digital zombies just never have the opportunity to develop. You think if you have 10,000 likes that you're popular? I mean, get a grip.
You know, William, I may be moving off this subject just a hair, but okay. I started working on an idea for a show based on genetic memory. And genetic memory, according to Wikipedia, is a memory present at birth that exists in the absence of sensory experience. You know, I think that we should all have, if what I'm reading about genetics or the genetic, the genome, that we all should have at least some of these at birth present sensory experiences that are somehow being obliterated by the social media, by the television, by these experiences of the mind that are altering our DNA as we speak.
Well, if you go through and you look at the people who influenced Terence McKenna, you know, he was greatly influenced by people who understood this primordial. That's why I say, you know, you've got 3 billion years of wisdom in your body. I mean, this body is the result of 3 billion years of experimentation. And that includes your body. You know, when I say these people are reductionist, they believe, you know, if you're a physicist and you start looking, you know, like at the turn of the 19th century, you know, they were talking about atoms and neutrons and protons. And then, you know, now the number of particles, the reductionist, you know, drive to find the God particle, you know, the particle that is small, you know, that can't get any smaller. It's the thing that drives everything. I mean, in the pursuit of that, you have to have a 3-inch dictionary to just define the terms the physicists use now. I mean, they have divided this thing up so much to try to find the primary thing that it's kind of laughable. And the Greek philosophers, you know, the ones that Terence was greatly influenced when he was in high school, you know, they worked through this a long, long time ago, and they said, you know, there is a spirit, you know, this genetic or subconscious, cultural, racial memory, and it's intact. When I watched my son being born, a home birth, I mean, when he came in, I thought, boy, you know, when I say that is our child, I said, this guy came in, and he was already on his own track. I mean, I might want to take credit for it, but this guy, I could see it in his eyes that he was on a program. I mean, he had his own path. And, you know, I might think like, well, I've got to make sure that he grows up and learns the right stuff. But I had this immediate experience that this dude was on his own thing. And there was a power there, that birthing experience. I mean, this guy came intact. And, of course, you know, I was going to have the responsibility to make sure that this genetic, you know, racial, you know, cultural, it's pre-cultural. It's proto-cultural.
And, William, and we'll be back in a few minutes. I don't know if you can hear the music. Hey, we got to take a break here. We'll be back. This is Captain Fred. One more segment. We'll be back.
Dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER, stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation, and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
All right, we're back. We're going to have to rush this. William, I've dug up a clip of Terrence and William and DNA. I mean, Memory and DNA. We're going to end the show with this. Thanks for calling. We'll be back next week. Thanks a lot, guys. Well, I thought we were rushing to do that. Yeah, I thought we had time to play that. Let's end up. William, appreciate it.
Because I was thinking that, or it just sounds really close to what you were talking about, especially the neurogenetic level, where you can tune into the actual DNA and get a sort of a readout of the evolutionary process and pattern. So,
yeah, I like the model. I'm not sure of the mechanism. On the other hand, one of the most mysterious issues in neurophysiology is the issue of memory. In other words, where is it? We know that in the course of your lifetime, every molecule in your body will be swapped out 5 times. Well, then how can a 70-year-old woman remember the smell of her grandmother's dress when she used to climb up into her lap? We know that people can undergo horrific accidents, brain damage and cancer of the brain and this sort of thing, and that their memory is in some cases virtually unscathed. this has been, in fact, the greatest embarrassment of materialist science in the past 50 years, or one of them, is they have made zilch progress on understanding memory. And, you know, it's right smack in the center of everything we want to do. It's a communication technology. It's a nanotechnology. It's a molecular genetic technology for information and storage retrieval that works with images, music, sound. And we don't have a clue as to how it works. I tend to believe that nature is fairly conservative, and that once you develop a mechanism that's good for a certain function, you will find it iterated in other areas where that function is called upon. So notice that the DNA, in a way, if you understand how it works, it's like a chemical learning system. It templates the environment, and it responds to environmental selection by building proteins of a certain type. In a way, it's a chemical engine for responding to the environment. Well, then if you look at the nervous system, it's an electrochemical system. It's a combinatory system where information moves in the body down the nerve fibers at a pretty good clip. But why then are we such slow-moving creatures? Well, because every time it gets to a synaptic cleft, it stops being electricity and it turns into a complex chemical reaction to bridge the gap, to go down the next wire to the next gap. And so in the course of this electro to chemical to electro to chemical transmission of the signal, it slows down to a few hundred miles an hour. And that determines our speed as organisms. Downstream, this may all be sped up. Memory seems to work almost instantaneously, but no mechanism is visible. I mean, if you really want to look at a human function that's present in all of us and easily studied and may hint at undiscovered principles in physics or miraculous new orders of nature, human memory would be a real place to begin, I think.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.